From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host today, Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action, and I'm sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, the economy smashed predictions and jobs are up 3.6% after the Department of Commerce announced that 263,000 jobs had been added and that unemployment is a 49-year low. The Mueller report and Attorney General Barr took center stage in the Senate Judiciary Committee with Mueller's ongoing conversations with House Dems on the Judiciary Committee, talking potentially about his appearance to discuss his findings and video just breaking within the past few hours of a Muslim society in Philadelphia showing children singing, "We will chop off their heads for Allah." It is all in a week here in the United States and particularly the nation's capital. We will kick off today's show with a discussion of a report coming out of the Poynter Institute. It was a compilation of 515 unreliable news sites that allegedly spread false or misleading information, in which 29 conservative organization news sites were tagged as, get this, un-news, a new category for me. Tucker Carlson's Daily Caller was included, as was Laura Ingraham's LifeSite website and the Daily Signal, the news website of the Heritage Foundation. And Katrina Trinko, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal, joins me to drill down. In my second segment, a new Pew Research study indicated that 55% of Americans pray daily. I'll feature some of the audio highlights from yesterday's National Day of Prayer, including the Rose Garden ceremony hosted by President Trump, with some of the Orthodox Jews who survived the synagogue shooting on the last day of Passover in California. At the bottom of the hour, Democratic representative from Alabama, John Rogers, revealed the increasingly extreme ideology of the modern-day Democratic Party on abortion. And as he debated the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, you won't believe what he said. I've got the disturbing audio. Alexandra DeSantis of the National Review joins me to discuss. And in my final segment today, transgender activists push for inclusion in yet another sport in which women are competing, women's powerlifting, allowing biological males who identify as female to be competitors under a transgender category against biological females. I will talk to Beth Stelzer, founder of SaveWomensSports.com. Thanks for joining me on Washington Watch. As a reminder, this is Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action, filling in for Tony Perkins. Go to our podcast for today's broadcast, TonyPerkins.com, for more information on today's guests and to share the podcast with other listeners. You can follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins or me, if you'd like, at Sarah P. Perry. I'm excited to talk to my next guest, in part because I read so much of what her site publishes. But first, the Poynter Institute for Media Studies, which describes itself as a group that champions freedom of expression, civil dialogue, and compelling journalism that helps citizens participate in healthy democracies, has put the Daily Signal, this site, on its list of unreliable news websites, saying that the organization's site was guilty of bias. While they rightly dismissed satire sites like the Onion-produced Clickhole, they also listed well-known, highly reputable conservative sites like Tucker Carlson's The Daily Caller and conservative activists Laura Ingraham's website, LifeZet, as well as Judicial Watch's website. And of course, as to be expected, Breitbart. They are alternately described as biased or clickbait. Poynter Institute also included our friends over at The Daily Signal, the news website founded in 2014 by the Heritage Foundation. And joining me now with her response is my first guest, Katrina Trinko, the editor-in-chief of The Signal. Katrina, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Sarah.
So I want to start first with the good reporting that The Daily Signal does, because I did read your response in your publication, and you really do hold to the highest level of journalistic integrity. And as an erstwhile journalism major, I understood the value of how important it was to rely on factual reporting, reporting and to get both sides of the story. So I want to first start with the fact that you cover stories that the mainstream media isn't always interested in telling. So can you give us some of your recent coverage that really didn't get any additional attention in the mainstream media?
Absolutely. And thank you for your kind words about our standards, Sarah. So, we published stories. One a couple of years ago was about a Border Patrol immigrant or Border Patrol agent who is the son of an illegal immigrant. And he believes in keeping the border secure. That's not a story you're going to see on mainstream media. We also, a couple months ago, we published an op-ed by Jamie Shoup. He is a man who transitioned to being a female and then transitioned to being non-binary. Both of those moves were widely covered in mainstream media. He has since then decided that he is actually a man, that he did what he did was not right, and he's changed his life. We covered that story, but didn't really get picked up by mainstream media, funnily enough. And actually, on Monday, we're going to be releasing a new documentary about a girl in Connecticut, Selena, who is trying to compete in high school sports but is losing to transgender athletes. You don't see those stories elsewhere.
I was going to say that's probably not something we will see anywhere else. So I want to talk a little bit about the fact that there was an accusation ultimately of dishonest journalism. And as we have discussed sort of briefly, your outlet makes a point of seeking both sides on every one of the stories that they report. And the article that you wrote in the Daily Signal outlines multiple chances that some of the objects of your reporting had to be able to respond. And yet, to be given that accusation of bias really is a form of dishonest journalism in and of itself, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we write about news that is of interest to conservatives. We are part of the Heritage Foundation. We're very transparent about that. You know, not every news outlet can cover every issue. Okay. But, yes, we take fairness very seriously. And I know that if someone is saying I did something or saying that, you know, I am accused of doing something, I want a chance to respond. And we take that extremely seriously. Just this week, we had an article about unions in California. We made sure to contact the state unions. We contacted the local unions. We gave everyone a chance to respond because we are fair. We don't need to be inaccurate. We don't need to be fake news. We just want to tell the truth and let everyone speak it.
So did the Poynter Institute ever give you a chance to respond to your designation as a source of biased or unreliable news?
No, they didn't. And that was something that personally was very upsetting to me. Journalism 101, if you know, you're a journalism major, you know this. You reach out to them. You say, you know, here's the accusation. Here's what we're going to do. Is there anything we're missing? Do you want to comment? There was no opportunity. And in fact, because unlike Poynter, I believe in giving people a chance to respond, I reached out to Poynter yesterday before I published my op-ed. And I said, I'm not finding in our records any contact of you guys reaching out to us. But if you have that in yours, please let me know. Here's my deadline. I don't want to print something that's not true. Funnily enough, they did not get back to me about anything being in their records about reaching out to us.
Now, I do want to mention the fact that Poynter claimed that the data set came from a various sort of cross-section of organizations, and some of those were the Fake News Codex, MetaCert Protocol, PolitiFact, which, if we're being honest, PolitiFact is a product of the Poynter Institute, so that's a bit self-serving, and open sources. Now, when you went back and clicked through to the open sources website, what did you find?
I found a blank website that was under construction. And that, to me, was just really the icing on the cake. It was like, you guys didn't approach us. You didn't give us any heads up. You gave us no chance to defend ourselves. Now I'm literally going through your public site, which is already smearing us. I'm trying to figure out what you have against us. And it goes to a non-existent webpage. So I don't even know what you think you have against us. And they responded to that by saying that I could look at the web archive somewhere. But, I mean, that's just so shoddy. That is not good journalism. And the other thing that we should mention is this list, according to reporting by the Washington Free Beacon, which is also on the list, was created by a person who is employed by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is, hello, among other issues, not a journalism outlet.
Not only are they not a journalism outlet, but they've been plagued recently by a scandal going all the way to the top of the organization involving racial discrimination and sexual harassment, among other problems, including half a billion dollars in assets and $121 million in offshore accounts. So not exactly someone you would hold up as being sort of the arbiter of objective truth in any respect.
No, of course not. And, you know, of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center for years has smeared, obviously, Family Research Council. You guys had that terrible shooting a few years back by someone who we believe is motivated by their hate groups list. They've smeared Alliance Defending Freedom, which has won 9 Supreme Court cases in the past 7 years as a hate group. I mean, they try to act like any social conservative is equal to the KKK. And an employee of this firm is who a respected journalism organization thought was the right person to decide what news was reliable and what wasn't. That's frankly really disappointing and tragic.
And I want to point out for our listeners that NewsGuard, which is an organization that's run by journalists that analyzes news sites' content and rates them accordingly, has not only given you all at The Signal a green rating, which is the highest rating, but has indicated that the highest standards of credibility and transparency have been met by your news outlet, which is the same standard, I might add, as major mainstream outlets such as CNN, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal. So even the outside data beyond the Poynter Institute's obvious bias indicates that the Daily Signal is indeed doing an accurate job. So here we are with an update. The Poynter Institute has announced last night that it was taking down the list of unreliable news sites. What did they actually say?
So they apologized. They said their methodology was problematic, which is ironic since they were saying everyone else was unreliable. obviously, they should put themselves on their own list. They did not rule out bringing back the list in some form. I have been communicating with them, and I said, you know, I certainly hope if they bring the list back that they give outlets a chance to respond before it's public, you know, that we would be happy to address questions or criticisms. But, you know, it's really, it's not, they're not being very prominent about taking it down. It's not something that they're really falling all over themselves to apologize for, and I do think that's concerning.
Yeah, I think it's concerning as well. And I will say that because they were talking about reassessing after the audit, going back and double checking the veracity of the list and then republishing, I think we all sort of wait with bated breath to see actually what an updated list of any sort looks like. That seems to be a bit of the MO of liberal and left-leaning sites here lately, because it puts us in a category in which we are easily classified and listed. Katrina Trinko, who is the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal, has been my guest today. Katrina, thank you for joining me today. I encourage you to check out the Daily Signal's web. Their news broadcast and their podcasts are as good as their journalistic written reporting online. Coming up next, a new Pew Research study indicates that 55% of Americans pray. I'll feature some of the audio related to prayer from yesterday's National Day of Prayer, including a Rose Garden ceremony hosted by President Trump with Orthodox Jews who survived the synagogue shooting. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action. I'm filling in for Tony Perkins today. As a reminder, go to our podcast website, tonyperkins.com, for more information on today's guests and other resources. You can follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins, or me if you'd like at Sarah P. Perry. Well, we could use love in today's political day and age, and so this year's National Day of Prayer theme was taken from John 13:34, in which Jesus said, "Love one another as I have loved you." So the heroes of Saturday's Shabbat of Poway synagogue shooting in California attended an event marking the National Day of Prayer on Thursday in the White House Rose Garden alongside President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump. And I do love this. Rabbi Yisrael Goldstein, who was shot in both hands in the attack, called the president a mensch par excellence, a Yiddish term meaning a person of excellence or integrity, and credited him with helping to start the healing process. Let's listen to Trump's introductory remarks here.
As we unite on this day of prayer, we renew our resolve to protect communities of faith and to ensure that all people can live and pray and worship in peace. In recent months, it's been pretty tough. We've seen evil and hate-filled attacks on religious communities in the United States and all around the world. 1 month ago, three historically black churches were burned tragically in Louisiana. In Sri Lanka and New Zealand, hundreds of Christians and Muslims were brutally murdered at their places of worship. In October, an anti-Semitic killer attacked the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. And last week, a gunman opened fire at a synagogue in Poway, California, while Jewish families celebrated the last day of Passover. We mourn for the loss of one extraordinary member of that congregation, Lori Gilbert Kay, who stood in front of the shooter and gave her life to protect her rabbi. We will fight with all our strength and everything that we have in our bodies to defeat anti-Semitism, to end the attacks on the Jewish people, and to conquer all forms of persecution, intolerance, and hate.
Well, President Trump does have his finger on the pulse of the national dialogue and what Americans are doing. And concurrently, the Pew Research Center actually released some of their most recent research on the concept of prayer, and it was discovered that Americans pray daily more than any other wealthy nation, and the credit is going to our embrace of religious freedom that's created an open religious market. So President Trump heralded this on the National Day of Prayer, which is actually higher than the world average of 49% and significantly higher than the 40% of other wealthy nations overall. In fact, Pew suggested that it was the country's fight for religious freedom that has made prayer so big in the United States. And in fact, the report issued this statement: why does the U.S. have higher self-reported daily prayer than other wealthier countries? Some scholars posit that the lack of government interference in religion has created an open market, a landscape where different religions enthusiastically compete for new members. Well, open markets was also relative to the fact that President Trump made some policy announcements and introduced his next steps in how the notion of religious liberty would be protected through some federal agencies. Let's listen here.
Every citizen has the absolute right to live according to the teachings of their faith and the convictions of their heart. This is the bedrock of American life. To protect this heritage, my administration has strongly defended religious liberty, two words you haven't heard too much about for a long period of time, but now you're hearing it all the time. Religious liberty. Earlier this week, I took action to ensure that federal employees can take paid time off to observe religious holy days. And just today, we finalized new protections of conscience rights for physicians, pharmacists, nurses, teachers, students, and faith-based charities. They've been wanting to do that for a long time, right, Mike? They've been wanting to do that for a long time. Happened today. Together, we are building a culture that cherishes the dignity and worth of human life. Every child, born and unborn, is a sacred gift from God. In addition, I am committing to you today that my administration will preserve the central role of faith-based adoption and foster care agencies to care for vulnerable children while following their deeply held beliefs.
Dr. Ronnie Floyd, the National Day of Prayer Task Force president, said this: there is no great movement of God that has ever occurred that does not begin with the extraordinary prayer of God's people. Yesterday on Twitter, the theme verse, John 13:34, love one another, was trending on Twitter, which is a nice trend from the regular dialogue on the social media platform. National Day of Prayer has been called for since 1775, when the Continental Congress designated a theme for prayer in forming a new nation. President Reagan amended the law in 1988, designating the first official day of prayer on the first Thursday of May. And as we get into our next segment, we encourage you here at FRC to pray for those around you and pray that God's spirit of love would infuse itself throughout a nation that is deeply and bitterly divided along partisan lines, particularly as we approach an election season. When the numbers aren't in yet on how many people viewed the National Day of Prayer at Statuary Hall last night, nearly 1 million people watched the national service on Facebook, which is encouraging in what are often very dark times. You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action, filling in for Tony Perkins today. Coming up next, Alabama representative in the House, Democratic John Rogers, revealed an increasingly pro-death ideology of the modern-day Democratic Party. These are conversations more common than not. While he debated the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Act, he made a chilling statement. I've got the audio next on Washington Watch.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, during a debate in the Alabama House of Representatives over a proposed abortion ban, Democratic Representative John Rogers made an astonishing remark about why he opposed the bill. And we are hearing more and more commentary from elected state-level political leaders that is increasingly extreme. Let's listen to what he said.
I'm not about to be as a male tell a woman what to do with her body. She has a right to make that decision herself, to rape her instead. Some kids are unwanted, so you kill them now, kill them later. You bring them in the world unwanted, unloved, you send them to the electric chair. So you kill them now, I kill them later.
So joining me now to discuss this outrageous remark is Alexandros DeSantis of the National Review, who's written on this horrifying remark. Alexandra, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi there. Great to be with you.
So when you first heard the comment made by Representative Rogers, what was your reaction?
Oh, I was honestly appalled. I mean, it's just crazy. You don't really hear even, politicians who tend to support abortion talking like this in such black and white terms, saying that if children are unwanted or unloved, it's better to kill them. But I guess my next reaction was, this is what all abortion is, right? And maybe more of them should just admit it.
Well, you noted in your piece at the National Review that it's very, very easy for pro-abortionists to dismiss unborn human beings as clumps of cells, right? So what's intriguing particularly here, and what makes it particularly horrifying, is that Representative Rogers has exposed the lies and admitted that every abortion procedure, no matter when or how it takes place, intentionally ends an innocent human life, which means at least he's using the correct language, right?
That's exactly right. And I think we hear so much about women's health and reproductive freedom and the right to choose, and we never talk about what abortion actually is. And we could have a debate about whether it should be legal or not, but so rarely do we even hear somebody who supports abortion rights admit what abortion is, that it's intentional killing of a living human being. And so as appalling as this comment was from Representative Rogers, I think at least he was admitting that.
So Alabama Senate Majority Leader Republican Greg Reed called out this chilling comment and said that the remarks, kill them now or kill them later, should be condemned at the state and the national level. So can you tell me, can you posit a theory as to what this says about the trending nature of the Democratic Party?
I mean, I think it's been pretty clear over the last couple of months that Democratic politicians are becoming increasingly extreme on abortion rights, especially, you know, during the Trump administration. They're afraid of Roe v. Wade being overturned, and we're seeing them advance policies in a variety of states to expand abortion rights up until birth of, you know, fully viable fetuses. And so I think this comment fits right into that, and that's why you don't see, you know, Democratic politicians are not coming out and condemning this by and large.
And we know it started with Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York and then went to Governor Ralph Northam in Virginia, who made the comment about then the mother and the physician has a choice to make after keeping the baby comfortable, quote unquote. Democratic Governor Tony Evers in Wisconsin promised to veto the Born Alive ban that was passed in his state legislature. Now, Roy Cooper in North Carolina has vetoed their Born Alive Act. In fact, the Senate voted 30-20 to override the veto on Tuesday. Now it's headed back to the House. So thankfully, we see sort of a response of these House-led state legislatures still clinging to rational, logical reasons, scientific evidence, and understanding that the nature of a Born Alive ban is so obvious as to not elicit debate, that it should not be a partisan issue. But these are individuals who are actually doubling down. In fact, Donald Trump Jr. tweeted that this was a stomach-curling statement. It makes Ralph Northam look like a moderate. How did Representative Rogers double down in his response to the president's son?
Yeah, he was asked about Donald Trump Jr.'s criticism, and Rogers responded and said, essentially, well, you know, this is perfect evidence that I was correct. Donald Trump Jr. should have been aborted. So he clearly is not at all repentant about what he said, he obviously meant it.
So let me say something about political incivility, which sort of seems to be the flavor of the day, right? We were just talking in our previous segment about the nature of prayer and the desire to pray for love to reign supreme in a nation such as ours that's so deeply divided. But what we're seeing is actually an increase in the partisanship of both parties and this kind of cringe-worthy rhetoric coming out of these state executive offices. But by the way, we do want to note that the Alabama House passed the abortion ban in question by an overwhelming 74-3 vote and will be taken up by the state Senate in the next few days. So while we are not seeing much success here in Washington, D.C., when we are looking back at these states, a number of these particular states, like Alabama, are in fact championing preborn babies, despite the likes of Representative John Rogers of Alabama. Where do you think we're going to find the Democrats heading toward the 2020 election? It comes from a very honest place. Are we going to find ourselves further left?
I think so. And if you look at all the 2020 Democrats running right now, every single one of them has said that they support abortion until the very end of pregnancy. And so I don't think they're intending to moderate on this issue anytime soon.
My guest today has been Alexandra DeSantis of National Review. Thanks for joining us, Alexandra. You are listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry in for Tony Perkins today. Coming up next, an issue that continues to be hot button and continues to raise the consciousness of free thinking, chromosomally solid, biologically based ideologies. Coast to coast, or it should, at least. We're going to talk about trans activists pushing for inclusion and women's powerlifting. I'll talk to Beth Stelzer, founder of Save Women Sports, coming up next.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit EndBirthdayAbortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit EndBirthdayAbortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Well, on April 28th or thereabouts, a biological man with the given name Mark Gregory, who identifies as a woman and now calls himself Mary Gregory, took the Masters World Record for women's squat, women's bench press, and women's deadlift in United States powerlifting. A female Olympian responded by condemning the pointless and unfair playing field where biological women are beaten by biological men who identify as transgender women. My next guest is the founder of SaveWomenSports.com and understands this issue extremely well. Her name is Beth Stelzer. Beth, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you, Sarah, for giving me this opportunity. I'm glad to be here.
So before we talk further about this particular situation with Mark Gregory and how he elbowed his way into a U.S. powerlifting competition, I want you to talk to us a little bit about your personal story as a weightlifter when you had to compete against a man named Joel Cooper, but who now calls himself J.C. Cooper. Can you sort of set the stage for us?
So I didn't exactly have to compete against Cooper. What happened was, I'm just a small town housewife who happens to have a hobby of powerlifting. And when I managed to get the muscle mass and courage to go to the women's state competition, I was surprised by Cooper, who is a man and identifies as a woman, protesting because men weren't allowed to compete as women in the USAPL contest.
So you began powerlifting at what point in your life? Because I do think the backstory here is very compelling for our listeners.
Sure. I kind of consider myself a normal mom, and a couple of years ago found out how important the physical health was for my mental health, and started running in 5Ks and trying different fitness classes and just fell in love with powerlifting, and that's what I've been doing for the past couple of years.
which makes you infinitely cooler than I am, by the way. My favorite lift is usually the remote to the TV, but that's about all I'll lift. So let's go back to the most current situation here with Mark Gregory. He calls himself Mary. He posted on his Instagram, "What a day, 9 for 9, Masters World Squat Record, Open World Bench Record, Masters World Deadlift, and Masters World Total Record." And I saw the picture on Instagram, and Beth, I had to laugh because it was such an obvious shattering of the competition that just one look at his Instagram profile pic and a recitation of the titles that he had just won indicates beyond a shadow of a doubt how vastly unfair this competition is. I mean, does he really think that he is kidding the individuals who are going to come across his social media profile or the individual judges who are tasked with bringing individuals like this into the competition and judging them alongside biological females? I mean, does he realize that there are many of us scratching our heads and going, are we the only people who are seeing this?
Yeah, I believe the intent was to fool everyone. There was a statement released by this 100% Raw Lifting Federation that there were some rumors that they might be transgender, but everyone was too afraid to ask. And I feel this brings up a really good point that, well, how do we deal with this? What is the right way to deal with this? And it was upon a drug screening that it came out that this Mary Gregory was actually Mark.
So
how do we stop them from pretending to be either or? Where do we draw the line?
And I think there's a great discussion point here, and I actually want to go to that in a second. This is particularly relevant based on the fact that the Equality Act is pending now in the U.S. House of Representatives, and that in and of itself is an absolute quagmire of rhetorical inaccuracies and future ideological dangers for individuals like you and I who still believe in the nature of biological reality and that biology is not indeed bigotry. But I want to wrap up this section first about Mark Gregory with the fact that former British Olympic swimmer Sharon Davies condemned the patent unfairness of biological men competing alongside women by tweeting, "This is a trans man, a trans woman, a male body with male physiology setting a world record and winning a woman's event in America in powerlifting. A woman with female biology cannot compete." You had to be encouraged by the fact that somebody who isn't even a powerlifter, not even in the same sport, can look at this, but as an Olympic athlete, review this situation and say, this is absolutely ridiculous.
It's absolutely great. It gives women like me the opportunity to feel safe and speak up and know that we are basically the silent majority. We just need a chance to be heard. And I think that instances like what happened this weekend is going to bring this to light, just how basically silly it is. And I want to bring up the point that the Powerlifting Federation did say that they will not be giving the female records to this person.
Excellent. And that must be a recent development because we did get your press release from Save Women's Sports yesterday, and it was under consideration at that point. So they have made an official distinction at this point, and they've changed the rule. Is that correct?
Well, this is a different federation than what I was discussing in the press release. So this is the 100% Raw Lifting Federation that was dealing with Gregory, and I lift with the United States Powerlifting.
And they are still considering.
They are still considering. Yes, May 9th, they have proposed that the transgender participation policy be changed to allow men to compete as women.
And this is a sex identification only. In other words, there is no surgery required, no hormones required, no medical diagnosis required, just a self-ID. In other words, a biological man can come in, identify himself as a transgender woman, and compete under this proposed regulation change on the same footing as a biological female. Is that right?
This exact proposal is stating that a possibility of them lowering their testosterone for a period of time, but that's being thrown back and forth right now, and different federations are proposing different standards. So, in sports, we believe that we should have XY and XX, and then we should also have criteria for the women's category and suggest that we should have a testosterone level for that.
And you made a point of calling out this Mark Gregory, who presents himself as Mary on Facebook. What did you say when you called him out?
Just that it's basically unfair.
That as the women's master world squat record, open world bench record, master's world deadlift record, master's world total record, he's born a man, he's proud of this cool new trophy from dominating the women's division in powerlifting, which I thought was a fabulous assessment of a very accurate self-representation, because his social media profiles are plastered with him holding a very novel, very large trophy after coming into this competition. So really the bottom line on this, the transgender inclusion in women's sports is not really a continuation of women's sports. It's not really an alteration of women's sports. It's not an exception to women's sports. You really believe at Save Women's Sports, and you yourself, as do I, that this is the end of women's sports, don't you?
Yeah, correct. I mean, we need the public to understand that transgender women are men, and male bodies in female sports just does not make sense, not only on a fairness level physically, but mentally it's not great as well. We're talking with the Equality Act of sharing our sports teams, our bathrooms, our locker rooms, everything. If their refusal to believe in biology erases the lines of the sexes, and womanhood would be demolished.
Duke Law School Professor Dorianne Coleman testified that biological males have an inherent athletic advantage over biological females due to the chemical makeup of their bodies. And the scientific evidence supports that extensively. In fact, we now learn in a new medical study that there are over 6,000 genetic differences between men and women. There is difference in muscle mass. There is difference in bone density. There are differences in height, speed, exhaustion rates. There are so many physical differences that there really is no conceivable way to make such a biological separation equal under any concept of applicable regulation in sports, is there?
You're absolutely right. I'm almost at a loss for words right now that I have to be defending this. And then my opposition is saying that there's no simple or even complex biological test that can tell you who's a man and who's a woman. I mean, this is absolute denial of science.
So we know a couple of things about the scientific evidence, and I've just mentioned a few of them, but our friend Dr. Michelle Cretella, who is the chair of the American College of Pediatricians, has specifically talked about how this in and of itself is not only scientific separation, but that indeed this can be child abuse when we apply the same philosophy. And this is really, and I hate to use the colloquialism, slippery slope, but really this is what it is. When we use the philosophy of cracking open that door for equal partnership with transgenders who identify as women, who are actually biological men, with biological women, what you've done is you have cracked open the door to a dissolution of ideological reality. Really, this is the first step in what is a very, very problematic watershed moment, not only for sports, but for the opportunity for our kids in public schools to have to share bathrooms or locker rooms with biological males, to share hotel rooms on overnight trips with school sports, to compete on the same basis in athletic teams, in motel rooms. There is truly no end to this particular dissolution. We slide down this hill with the beginning, with this sports controversy, if you will, even though to you and I and to other rationally minded people, that there is a very obvious difference between a biological man and a biological woman. And this kind of, and I have said it before and we'll say it again, reductionist logic that you can dress a certain way, that you can talk a certain way, that you can have a certain type of surgery and apply or remove the correct parts and therefore become a woman, really does a massive disservice to 50, 100 years of women's progress from gaining the right to vote and onward, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Equality Act basically erased all the work we do to Title IX in sports. But you're right, it overflows into a lot of areas, and I like to refer to it as opening a floodgate. You know, and it's going to be really hard to take these things back if we grant these gender identity freedoms. And womanhood isn't a costume. And we have girls in high schools walking out in protest. We are not happy about this. We're not being asked about our rights being taken away to these safe, sex-separated spaces.
I like the argument that to encourage transgender identity hormones and surgery for this struggle is akin to encouraging a weight loss regimen for teen girls with anorexia, and that the transgender movement will do more harm than good. And in fact, that is what the science indicates, that not only is this not, these cross-sex hormones, these transformative surgeries, not only are they not studied long-term, but that in an adolescent environment, 75 to 90% of prepubescent children who indicate they have some question about their biological identity grow out of that phase and could, in fact, reach adulthood unmolested by some of these therapeutic interventions. So if you and I take a stand for the reality of science and the separation in things like sports, in things like private areas, in things like bathrooms, hotel rooms, sex-segregated spaces for a reason, and I won't bore you with the data. I could go on past our hour with this, but truly the safety of women, the safety of children depends on our making sure that we stand up and take a stand against the increasingly loud nonsense of the transgender activists. So for those of you, go ahead, Beth.
These children with gender dysphoria, you're right, they grow out of it a lot of the time. And many of us, you know, we were tomboys. We know what it's like to grow up. Puberty is awkward. It's tough. We need therapy for these kids. And that doesn't have to mean cross-sex hormones and puberty blockers.
No, it does not. And the weight of the evidence, though not loudly proclaimed, is on our side. The fact that you and I are having a conversation about what it means to physically and biologically and scientifically be a woman in this day and age is beyond my ken at this point. But I am so glad we had a chance to talk. Beth Stelzer of SaveWomenSports.com has been my guest today. A reminder that the House will be voting soon on the Equality Act. It has passed out of committee. And let me tell you, friends, there is no religious liberty protection. It guts RFRA. We encourage you to call your elected representative at 202-224-3121. When it heads to the Senate, call your senator, 202-225-3121. This has been Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.